Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be learning Yeshayahu Perek Tet Vav, Chapter 15. We are in the middle of a section called the Masa'ot, which are oracles by the Jewish Navi, in this case Yeshayahu, against the other nations. The last two prakim that we did were focused on Bavel, and then at the end Assyria, a little section at the end about Peleshet. And now these next two prakim, Tet Vav and Tet Zayin, will be focused on Moav. So in order to understand this Masa against Moav, we actually have to dig a little bit deeper back into our history with Moav, because our history with Moav is complicated, because as they say, family is complicated, and Moav, to some degree, is family. And I say that because the nation of Moav comes from Lot, originally, after the destruction of Sodom, Lot's daughters panic and think that they will no longer be able to, that it's the end of the world, and the only way that they can continue the world is by having a child with their father, and that is the resulting child, Moav, which derives from Me'av, from my father. Now, with that kind of auspicious beginning, Moav does develop into its own nation. And in the story of Moav, really becomes, I would say, a focus in Tanakh, in Bamidbar, where Moav, seeing Bnei Israel's exodus from Egypt, and now their entrance, preparation in their, you know, in the end, the 40th year to enter into Israel, they're afraid. So they famously hire Bilam to curse Bnei Israel. And while that specific plan doesn't work out, they do have another scheme, which is to cause Bnei Israel to sin with the daughters of Moav. And that results in some, you know, kind of intermarriage sexual crimes, which if not, you know, Pinchas stands up and kills the perpetrators. That ends the resulting plague on Bnei Israel. But ultimately, in Devarim, a halakha comes out against the Moabites. And this is interesting. This is a lot of the backdrop to Megillat Rut and the reasons why people were so hesitant to accept, you know, Rut into the community. But I'm going to read the pasuk. The pasuk says, Lo yavo amoni v'moavi b'kahal Adonai, gam dur asiri lo yavo lahem b'kahal Adonai ad olam. So a Moabite, or here it's also the against Amon, are not allowed to come into Kahal of Hashem, into the community of God, for any generation. This doesn't wear off. They are not invited to convert and to enter into Kahal Hashem. Now, why not? The next pasuk in Devarim explains, Al davar asher lo kidmu etchem belechem uvamayim bederech betzeitchem mimitzrayim. Because they didn't offer us food and drink on our way out of Egypt, which is what neighbors should do, which is what family should do, and they didn't. And v'asher sachar alecha et Bilam ben Beor, right? And they also hired Bilam ben Beor mipetor Aram Narayim l'kalalecha in order to curse us. So that explains that prohibition of allowing a Moabite, someone from Moab, into the Kahal of Hashem. Of course, in Ruth, this is resolved in the fact that she's female and not male, and she didn't adopt those same ways, but that just explains some of the backdrop there. Now, all of this tension in the geography and in the relationship continues throughout Navi. And I would say the geography, because they're located east of the Jordan River, and that's an area that there's a fluidity with the boundary of Jews that are also east of the Jordan. Also, the relationship, again, like, you know, this is a complicated history, and that also comes out. Now, fascinatingly, the tension in this relationship that we just described from Tanakh, we also have inscripted in archaeological evidence that was really discovered kind of recently, in 1868, in Jordan. There was a rock that was found, a stone, and this stone is called the Mesha Stele, and it can be actually still viewed. You can see it at the Louvre. And it is a really important piece of archaeological finding because it has the words of King Mesha of Moab, and he describes how a victory that he had over Israel. And he actually kind of goes out of his way to really talk about how that victory was over Israel. And he talks about how his god, Chemosh, who was the god of Moab, had been angry at his people, and that's why they suffered at the hands of Israel. But now they, Chemosh has kind of brought them back into his favor. And therefore, Chemosh has like won out over Hashem. And now he has allowed the king of Moab to conquer all these lands and Moab to flourish. And not only that, but to take people from Bnei Israel as his slaves. Okay, so that's what we found on this inscription that is that's currently in Paris, but that describes the words and the thoughts of King Mesha that was written really in 840 BCE. Now, we have the specific adversary that he mentions in this deal is King Omri of Israel, who had, we know that he had taken portions of Moab. And then after Omri died, when his son took over, then Mesha actually began to recapture some of that territory and rebuild that territory. And actually, we have evidence of this as well from Sefer Melachim. So this also like is another account of something that we have in our Tanakh. So it's kind of a really exciting find. But okay, how does all this help us with Yeshayahu? So what Yeshayahu is doing here is he is describing the destruction of Moab. So I'm going to read the first two psukim. It's a very short parak. There are only nine psukim. I'm going to read the first two, and then we'll talk about how all that background information can help us understand those psukim. So here's pasuk aleph. Masa Moav, the pronouncement against Moav or to Moav, ki belel shudad ar Moav nidma, ki belel shudad kir Moav nidma. So you could already get the sense that there's almost like a poetry and a song to this parak, which we haven't really seen that much. And this is, he's talking about how on the nights that the cities, the major cities, such as the city of Ar, was destroyed, that was the ruin of Moab. And also when the on the night that the city of Kir was destroyed, again, Moab was ruined. And he continues, Allah habayit, v'divon habamot lebechi. So people go up to the bamot in order to cry, you know, over the destruction of Divon. Al Navo, and here's lists of cities again, Al Nivo, v'al medva Moab, Ilil. So again, they're going to wail over these cities that were destroyed. And these are actual lists of places. And then the pasuk, Yishayahu closes his pasuk by saying, Bechol roshav karcha kol zakan garua, that the people of Moab that he's describing, that are lamenting this destruction of Moab, they are not only crying and lamenting, but they're also pulling out their hair, as we know was the custom in the ancient Near East, in certainly in the pagan cultures, that was how they lamented death and destruction. So here, Bechol Roshav Karcha is describing the way that the people are pulling out their hair in response to the tragedy. Now, one of the things that characterizes this parak, which you could already see from those two psukim that we read, is that there's many places are mentioned, and it describes the destruction. That it describes really Moab's reaction to the destruction that will happen in these different places. And specifically, the description is very geographic, like how one would walk from all these different places and see the lament and see the destruction in all of these cities. So there's an important article that Dr. Yehuda Elitzur wrote about how understanding and knowing about the Moabite stone, Mesha steel, really helps us understand this parak. And it's twofold. First of all, many of the places that are mentioned here in this parak of Yeshayahu, the places that describe Moab's destruction, are also mentioned in Mesha steel. It's really the same, those same places, which is just fascinating that, you know, Yeshayahu lived about 100, you know, his prophecy is about 100 years after that. So he's responding, so to speak, to what's written on that steel. But it's a reversal. While the stone describes the Moabite king wandering to these places to rejoice over his victory there, over Israel and over Hashem. And it's a very grandiose description. I think he says the word I maybe like 13 times over the course of this. And I did this and I accomplished this and I went here. But instead, in this case, what Yeshayahu writes is those same places, but talking about the destruction that happened in those places, how all the like grandiose vision of the king of Moab didn't really come to fruition. But not only that, Elitzur points out that there's even word plays in this parak of Yeshayahu based on what was written on Mesha's steel. So for example, I'm going to read you one line from this this archaeological piece from the stone that was written by the king of Moab. And he wrote about how he built up the city of Karcha. And not only did he build up the city of Karcha, he said, I dug the ditch for Karcha with the chosen men of Israel, that he was able to subjugate Israel and use those slaves in order to build up the city of Karcha. Now, if you remember in the pasuk that we read in the beginning, when Yeshayahu describes how Moab will ultimately lament over their destruction, he said, Bechol Roshav Karcha, that every head will be bald because people will be lamenting so much that they'll be pulling out their hair in that ancient pagan practice. So not only does Yeshayahu directly mention the cities that are mentioned by Mesha, king of Moab, but he even does a word play on those cities by using the word Karcha, which is a city in the Moabite kingdom, but he uses it to describe the specific practice of lament that people will be doing once those cities are destroyed. I'm going to read one more pasuk, which has an interesting piece, and then we'll pull it together. But in pasuk hey, we have something interesting, which is a reaction to what's happening in Moab. And Yeshayahu says, "Libi leMoav yizak," right? My heart cries out for Moab. Why? Biricheha ad soar eglat shilishia. So because of all her fugitives that they need to run to all these different cities in Moab, and he lists those cities. Ki ma'ale haluchit babechi, they also go to Luchit and they go there crying. Ya'alebo ki derech horonim za'akat shever yo'oruru. And again, they run to different cities and they're crying as they run. So Yeshayahu describes how he laments over how the fugitives have no place and they end up running from city to city in a terrible state and in tears. And this is actually unusual. We didn't see any of this when we saw the description of the destruction of Babel, for example. There was no lament by Yeshayahu over that destruction. And this is really interesting and unusual. So the commentaries react to it. So what exactly is this? Is this sympathy? And Rashi gives a resounding yes. Rashi says there on that pasuk, Libi leMoav yizak, my heart cries out for Moab. And he says, poignantly, Nevi'ei Yisrael einam k'nevi'ei umot ha'olam. Right? The prophets of Israel are not like the prophets of the other nations. Why? Bil'am haya mevakish la'akor Yisrael. Alo davar. Bil'am wanted to destroy B'nai Yisrael for no reason. But in contrast, the Nevi'im of Israel lament over the destruction and the punishments that come to the other nation. So Rashi definitively says, yes, this is a call of sympathy. While Yeshayahu is describing the downfall of Moab, the downfall of their enemy, he's also saying, though, Libi leMoav yizak, our heart cries out for Moab. And we do see this piece in our, in our practice also, the way that we, celebrate the Seder, but at the same time take wine out of our cup in recognition of Egypt's suffering. But others disagree. Among, the Radak disagrees and says, no, Yeshayahu is not lamenting himself. He's just quoting other people who will lament when they hear about the destruction of Moab. But he's not himself lamenting. So there's kind of two perspectives that you can take here. So in closing, I just want to highlight again, we kind of looked at three things. Firstly, the complicated relationship with Moav, and knowing that complicated relationship that started with the birth of the original Moav and continues throughout Tanakh helps us understand the Perek and this fraught relationship between Moav and Yisrael. Secondly, the description of the fall of Moav fits very beautifully off of that very arrogant declaration by King Mesha, the Moabite king, that he inscribed in his stone when he described his victory over Israel and over the land. And here, this language is played off of in Yeshayahu. Instead of a Torah to show his victory, as Mesha described, Yeshayahu describes a Torah of destruction. And here I think is an interesting place where archaeological developments, really that we only have in our hands recently, can really help us not just validate, you know, things that we knew to be true from Tanakh, but it provides like kind of that outside piece. But it also helps us understand better things that we are reading in Tanakh and have a deeper understanding. And thirdly, we ended by discussing Yeshayahu's lament over the suffering Moav, the possible lament, certainly Lefi, according to the Perush of Rashi. And I think there is something to learn from that as well, that while the prophet is describing future destruction of other nations, there's still a piece that he can say, Libi Zoek, my heart cries out. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.